An abbreviated, slightly abbreviated version of the record for this Friday, the 20th of December. I'm Marcy Silman.
And I'm David Hyde.
In about a month, world leaders will meet in Geneva, Switzerland, with Syrian leaders to discuss a possible end to the crisis in Syria. For nearly 3 years, an armed conflict between Syrian rebels and the Assad regime has escalated from protests to all-out civil war. The influence of foreign fighters coming into Syria complicates diplomatic negotiations. William McCance is a fellow at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. William, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
The Belgium government is estimating that up to 2,000 European fighters have gone into Syria. Some people say about 11,000 foreigners from 70 different countries have traveled to join the fighting. Why has this conflict attracted foreign combatants?
Well, primarily because Syria is pretty easy to reach. I mean, there are a number of different reasons aside from that, but that's the main one. It's easy to get to from Turkey, so a lot of people can come in from Europe. It's also easy to enter through Iraq, Lebanon, Jordan. It's really ideal for attracting foreign fighters. Other theaters of conflict we've seen over the past decade have been harder to get to, say Somalia or Afghanistan. But Syria is ideally situated to attract the fighters. So that's the main reason.
Whose side are they coming in to fight on?
They're primarily coming in to fight on the opposition side, and these would be the Sunni rebel opposition. There are a number of foreign fighters who are coming to fight on the side of Assad, but a lot of them tend to be tied to the state of Iran, paramilitaries that are tied to the state, or Iran's special forces unit, the Quds Force.
We've heard a lot in the news about increasing violence in both Syria and neighboring Iraq. How have the foreign fighters impacted the scale of fighting?
They've had a huge impact on the scale of fighting, and they're pretty fungible. You know, because they don't have any local ties, they are free to move about the country, and they don't have the kind of inhibitions that more locally based fighters would have because they don't have any ties to the people. So it's one reason you see a lot of atrocities being carried out by foreign fighters because there's not that sensitivity to the local political situation or to people who've been living as neighbors for years. So, for example, a lot of the attacks on the minority Alawi community or the minority Christian community are carried out by foreign fighters because they didn't grow up living as neighbors next door to these people, so they have no problem in brutalizing them.
Interesting. The fighters are only one faction or one part of what's happening from outside of Syria. There's money coming in from other regions. Last week, the U.S. and Britain said they would suspend non-lethal aid to northern Syrian rebels after Islamist rebels raided a warehouse that was run by an ally of the Free Syrian Army. Islamist groups infiltrating Syria complicates the delivery of aid and money. But when we don't send the money, what kind of impact does that have?
Yeah, it has a huge impact. So there have been two things that have really kept the rebels from coming together to become an effective fighting force against the Assad regime. One is the influence of foreign money from private donors, much of it coming from the Gulf. There's no strings attached to that money. Most of it goes to the Islamist groups that have a very sectarian agenda. And the groups receiving that money then don't have any incentive to come together with the more moderate forces, say, attached to the Free Syrian Army, because they're already getting their money without strings attached. So that's one dynamic. The other dynamic is there is no state that is providing a consistent large amount of money and weapons to the rebels to fight. So you're unable then to create a centralized fighting force that would be capable of toppling the Assad regime. And into that vacuum then have flowed all of these smaller groups that are being funded by private individuals abroad.
So you and I are speaking about a month before these Geneva meetings are set to take place. How is all of this going to impact those meetings?
It will have a very negative impact because There's basically three revolving spheres happening simultaneously, circles within circles. So the larger circle on the outside is the international relationship between the United States and Russia. And they have are starting to come to some sort of accommodation. But the inner circles where you have the regional proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran, that's as hot as it ever has been. Mm-hmm. And then the inner circle of the rebels on the ground, they don't want to cut a deal at all. They've completely rejected the Geneva talks. So it doesn't matter if the Syrian opposition in exile sends representatives to the talks. The guys on the ground with the guns don't want to talk. So the conflict is not going to end regardless of what decision they come to in Geneva.
Should they go ahead with the talks?
Well, I mean, it can't hurt to talk. And, you know, who knows, maybe something shakes loose. But I'm very pessimistic about a positive outcome from the talks, given that the key regional players and the opposition groups on the ground, those that are doing the fighting, have no desire to see the conflict end yet.
William McCance, thank you for speaking with me.
You're very welcome.
William McCance is a fellow in the Sabin Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. You're listening to The Record on KUOW.